Welcome to the Rise and Shout podcast, episode 101. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, I am joined by my brother, Matt. We preview the Gonzaga game and also talk about BYU's dimming hopes to get into the NCAA basketball tournament. We then switch to Ziggy Ansah and all of the heads that he turned during the NFL Combine. We also talk about the coaching changes, and we're a little late to the party because we missed a week, but hey, we talk about Coach and I's new coaching staff and what we think that might mean for the 2013 season. We also talk a little bit about the Big 12 and Tom Homo basically slamming a couple folks on Twitter in a very nice and pleasant way. We also answer your tweet bag questions. This is the Rise and Shout podcast. You can catch us, as always, on iTunes. You can stream us at vanquishthefoe.com. Of course, you're going to listen to about an hour of us yammering on about BYU sports starting about right now. Rise and Shout podcast after a week off, mainly due to the fact that last week I sounded like a Wookiee with a hairball.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad. I could barely talk. I was very sick.
It's too bad you're feeling better. I mean, That didn't come out right.
Say that again?
What?
So this is our first episode after the 100th episode, also known as the 101st episode, for those of you scoring at home. We got a lot to talk about. For a time that is kind of a... you and your sodas. For a time that's supposedly kind of a dead time, you know, not a lot going on, football recruiting's done, and some of the other stuff, and basketball kind of winding up the conference, you know, season and stuff. This has been a busy couple weeks in BYU sports.
There's a lot going on.
We're going to get right to it, my friend. Right after we say, how excited are you that spring training has actually begun?
I've spent probably an abnormal amount of time thinking about and watching baseball in the past couple of days.
I'm watching
preseason games.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong at all. As a matter of fact, I think that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yes, yes, it is. I've been to spring training in Arizona and Florida. It's a lot of fun in person. It's a lot of fun.
I've not been to Arizona, but I've been a little bit to... I was in Florida 1 year.
Yeah, Arizona's cool because there's like 8 stadiums like within like 10 minutes of each other. And you can see a lot of games. Like I went to 3 games in a day and a half.
That's cool.
That was pretty cool. Florida's cool because it's Florida. And there's some other cool things going on. But they're way spread out. Like you have to drive all over the state. So
yeah, I only went to one stadium. So
yeah, I saw the Yankees stadium and... somebody else's stadium in Florida. Then I saw a bunch in Arizona. But anyway, baseball's back. We're excited. Very excited. And I apologize for my voice. I still sound pretty terrible. But
oh, you sound fine.
I sound probably about as terrible as usual, right?
Yeah, that's so, probably a fair assessment. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
So, all right. Let's talk about, start with some Gonzaga preview, Matt.
Oh!
So, Gonzaga is ranked number 2 in the nation. And I hear they're pretty good.
Yeah, they're a decent squad.
Yeah. They're a good team. I've heard.
They've had a decent run.
Yes, you know? Yes, they've had a decent run.
Couple of tough losses. But they've put together a decent resume this year.
They might be one of the best teams in the country or something.
Yeah, maybe. But you know what? They should be glad that they've not been ranked number 1 yet, because number 1s just seem to not last very long.
Have you been following any scores this evening in college basketball?
And now, is it true that Indiana has been beaten now twice as the number 1 team?
Yes, I think that's a safe thing to say.
That's pretty awesome.
Right
you know
now,
they say about IU.
What do they say?
I hate IU.
Yeah, that Purdue experience is going on here. What I love is I've got a friend at work who who's a big IU guy, grew up in Indiana, went to Indiana, and you know, he's been giving me a real hard time about how terrible Purdue's basketball team is this season.
And, not Purdue's year.
But my comeback response always is, well, you know, this will be fun. And, you know, when they have to vacate all these wins, that'll be fun too. So, you know, and I don't know if Crean's it. I do find Crean to, quite frankly, be... He's the kind of coach that if he was your coach, you'd love him. And everybody else, I find him insufferable when I watch them on TV. Like, he yells about everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And then did you read about at the Big Ten, he, like, yelled at the on the phone call with the Big Ten sports information guy, like, well, I don't understand what the criteria are for these weekly awards. Really? Really? You know, like, you care that much about if your guy got... I mean, can you imagine Krzyzewski or Dean Smith or pick a great basketball coach arguing with a conference sports information guy about the weekly award?
Well, I guess we just found where the division is between those coaches and guys like him.
Yeah, well, there's many divisions. But anyway, so let's talk about BYU and Gonzaga, Matt. I think most BYU fans are giving Gonzaga zero... BYU zero chance. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's absolutely fair. I mean, this is a Gonzaga squad that is one of the best teams in the country. Beat us by 20 points earlier in this season. Has only lost to a couple. Their two losses are against two very good basketball teams. And the BYU basketball squad this year has just not shown the ability to deliver a knockout punch in a game like this. I mean, I've seen nothing that shows that they have that in them.
That seems so strange to me. I mean, just because they're getting outscored in every second half for like the last month, I don't see why that's such a big deal.
That's not the problem. Like, they can get outscored in the second half, that's fine, as long as they're, you know, creating enough of a gap in the first half to make up for it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's not, you know.
Unfortunately, they haven't done that. Fortunately, I haven't done that. So,
and this is a tough stretch, you know, to come right off the St. Mary's game and then your next game, albeit a week later, but your next game is Gonzaga, when these are really, you know, the two toughest teams, at least in the conference schedule.
Yeah, and quite frankly, two of the toughest teams we've played all year, too. I mean, St. Yeah. Mary's is good, not nearly as good as Gonzaga. I think there's a big gap between Gonzaga and St. Mary's and a big gap between St. Mary's and us. And I would have thought there'd be a big gap between us and the rest of the conference. I don't know that there's, unfortunately, that big of a gap between us and the rest of the conference. Not like there was last season.
No, I don't feel that there is. I think that we're looking at basically two tiers in the West Coast Conference. The first tier obviously being those top two teams, and the second tier is everybody else. And the gap between the two is pretty wide.
Yeah. So, Matt, if we were building the scenario in which BYU could beat the Zags. And you prefer Zags or Bulldogs?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I like Zags.
It is
kind of
cool.
It's unique. It's something that, you know, it's unique to the program, to the name of the school. I mean, how many Bulldogs are there, you know, in college sports?
A lot.
You know, so Zags is cool. So I like Zags. Let's stick with Zags, and I think that's what they use a lot. Zagacious, he's used it in his Twitter handle.
Yes,
and he's for me like that's the go-to Gonzaga guy.
And he's been on this podcast before. I tried to have him on. He's been quite busy. You know, these people have lives and stuff.
Well, they need to figure out their priorities.
Yeah, there's no doubt of that. So let's talk about that ideal scenario. So my ideal scenario piece number one is they need to keep the guards out of the paint. The defense has to keep the penetration. I know Olenek is the best player on the team. I'm not disputing that. I think that's pretty clear that he's the guy. But on the other hand, I also think that Pangos can kill us by getting into the paint, and then he creates, and to a lesser extent Stockton, and then he creates these great, easy shots for his opponents. I mean, for his players, and we often were not in the right position the last time we played them, because we had to come in and help. What other things do you think we have to do to even have a shot at this?
Well, I also go back to Olenek, and he is this year 102 for 127 from the charity stripe. That's 80%.
That's pretty
good. He has shot 127 free throws, and he's good at it. So there's two pieces here to this problem. One is Brandon Davies likes to foul people, and he gets into foul trouble early, which will likely result in Olenek going to the line. So those are two things that BYU absolutely needs to avoid, is getting Davies in foul trouble early and sending Olenek to the stripe a lot.
So free throw shooting is important because of their top six guys in minutes, okay? The only bad free throw shooter, interestingly enough, is Stockton. Everybody else shoots at about 75% or better. If we foul them a lot, if they get to the line a bunch of times, they will not just Olenek, who you point out he's got a high shot and he shoots a lot of them. There will be a lot of they will make a lot of those shots, easy shots.
Yeah, I mean he's the leading scorer and he's getting some of those points from the line. But he's also just a good shooter.
Yes, he's a good shooter. Shooting field goal percentage is what, 66%?
Yeah,
it's just unreal.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's okay. He does all right for himself.
Yeah, he's decent.
Yeah, he's decent.
Even given that, I don't know that alone puts BYU within range against this team. I think on top of that, some people, we've been talking a lot about Carlino. Everybody talks about Carlino. Who is Carlino? I think you've got to see some people step up.
Is Matt Carlino.
Yeah. I don't know that Haas can carry the team on his back on this one. So I'm not sure what combination of things need to happen to put BYU in a situation to win this game.
Yeah, I think another thing that has to happen, Matt, is, and the two things I've said are going to be a little contradictory. They also shoot well from the three-point line.
Yep.
Right? So this is a team that is shooting at 38, 39% from the three-point line. So it's a double-edged sword. If you go at them at Pangos on the perimeter, he's going to drive, and then he's going to dish for an easier three-pointer or maybe even a layup. But you do have to control those two things on the perimeter if you're going to win. As I was saying, we're doing pie in the sky here, right? So, they have to be able to do that. They have to be able to control it. Just as a point of emphasis here, Tyler Haas shoots from three-point line about 37%. The entire team as a team, they shoot better, Gonzaga does, than Haas does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Haas against Gonzaga is not, the numbers aren't very prominent.
Yes, it's just true. He struggled that last game. Well, the last game, we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, we struggled there. And the other part is, the last one I'll say is, Davies has got to play. He can't get into foul trouble because one of the things, though they do have good big men that can guard him, probably some of the best in the league, he still can get points and put pressure on their defense. But if he's sitting on the bench, they won't be able to get any pressure on the defense, right? So,
right.
I'm hopeful that he can stay in. So Gonzaga, we have now played them since we joined the conference. We have now played them how many times? This will be our fifth time? Because we played them in the conference tournament,
right?
Right. This will be our fifth time. Is that right?
I believe that is correct.
And we beat them once so far. We're 1-4. Since we joined the and some of them have not been that close.
Well,
like the last one.
But the good news is that win was in Provo, right?
That win was in Provo. That win
was. Hey, so that's one thing. That's one thing going for the BYU squad coming into this game.
Yes. The perplexing thing to me is, why isn't Kafusi playing more? I see the other big men come in and they're not good. You know, Austin is struggling. You know, he's not shooting for a high percentage. He can't shoot free throws particularly well. And he's not giving you, you know, he's not a great defender. Okay? So you look at that. I mean, he's a decent shot blocker, and that's about it. But you look at Kafusi, and he brings energy, he brings size. I know he commits a couple dumb fouls, and he almost killed somebody in that, was that St. Mary's or Utah State?
It might have been both. He's had a couple really hard fouls.
Yeah, and he's really nice about it. He, like, helps him up afterwards. Like, I don't think there's anything malicious.
Sorry, I almost broke you. Let me pick you back up.
Sorry, I'm big and fast, and I like to hit people. But I would like to see more of him in this game and in the tournament. I'm hoping he gets some more of Austin's minutes, or if Davis gets in foul trouble. The thing is, offensively, there's not much that he does.
No.
You know, he's a rebounder, and he's a defender, and that's kind of it. But quite frankly, I mean, great, you put in Austin, and he can hit that, you know, fading 15-foot jump shot. Great. That's what I'm hoping of all our future 7-footers. But
the good news is, coming back to what you're saying there, is if you look at the minutes he's played since he joined the team, right, you're looking at small numbers. You know, he gets up into 5, you know, and then a couple, you know, 7-8 minutes. But you look at the last 2 games, he played 15 minutes against Utah State and 10 minutes against St. Mary's. So that seems to signal to me that we're looking at a little bit more Kafusi coming down the stretch. Now, what does that do to trying to stop somebody like Kelly Olynyk? I don't know.
Yeah, and the thing is,
other than knocking him down, I don't know defensively if he's really ready to bottle that guy up.
See, I don't know that Olynyk is going to be stopped. I don't know that we have someone that can stop him.
I do not believe that we do.
Personally. So to me, it's not stopping Olynyk. He's not going to shoot a perfect scoring game like last time. You know what I mean? He's not going to not miss a shot, right? Likely. I hope not again. But he's going to hit his shots. He's going to get to the free throw line a little bit. The point for me is we need to keep the other players from beating us. You know what I mean? Keep Pangos from penetrating and creating easy baskets. Keep Stockton from doing that. Because quite frankly, Stockton's not a good enough shooter for us to, you know, he should be kept on the perimeter. You know, he's a 31, 32% three-point shooter. Let him shoot it. You know what I mean? Pangos, you do not want to let him shoot it out there. You know, he's shooting at like 45% or something, something crazy like that. You know, and that's 145 attempts. It's not like he's only shot the ball 10 times or something. So to me, those are the keys. And quite frankly, Haas and Davies have to have big games. Carlino probably too. The three of them have to have the games. Those are our offensive guys. I mean, they're the best. The best three offensive players I think we have. And maybe that's not even that big of a, you know, I'm not probably, that's Captain Obvious right there, right?
Yeah, I think everybody's aware of that.
Yeah, they may have heard that. So, Matt, prediction
time. That's a pretty hard-hitting analysis right there.
Thank you. That's the Rise and Shout podcast. We do hard-hitting analysis. All right. Matt, prediction time. Final score. Go.
Really?
Yes.
You're gonna make me do it.
Of course. We do this all the big games.
Final score, Gonzaga wins 80-65.
You just hate BYU. I don't even know why you're on this podcast. I don't. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know. I'm disappointed in you.
I look at what's happened between the last time these two teams played. I don't see a ridiculous amount of development on BYU's side. I give them a little bit of an edge because this game will be at home. It's towards the end of the season. I think the fans are going to come out. I think it'll be loud. I think they're going to get pumped up, but frankly, they just don't have the horses to run with this Zag squad.
No, they do not. I agree with you. What was your final score? 86 to what?
80 to 65.
80 to 65.
Not 86 to 5. That's a much larger spread than I was predicting.
I had 81 to 67. So
wow, that's...
We basically had the same thing.
81 to 67?
Yeah.
That's a very specific score.
Why not? I'm just throwing out numbers here. I'm making it up as I go.
No, I was just interested. I would have been interested to learn that you've run some kind of statistical analysis, that you put together a spreadsheet.
I looked
that spat out those numbers.
At statsheet.com, I looked at the numbers and said, I think factoring in home court, they're about 14 points better than us. And they average 79 points a game. So there you go.
That's actually pretty close to what I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at Gonzaga, they are 5-2 versus the RPI top 50. Yeah. 2-1 versus top 25 teams. We are 0-5 against the RPI top 50. To your point that you made just a minute ago, I don't see anything over the past couple weeks where I say, you know what? You know, they've kind of turned around. Had they beat St. Mary's last week, I probably still would have predicted Gonzaga to win, but I think I would have been more comfortable saying, this could be a 7 or 8 point game. And when you talk about a 7 or 8 point game, a few lucky bounces, a few lucky three pointers going in when they wouldn't have otherwise, all of a sudden you can win that game, right?
Yeah, I'd even be more comfortable if they had blown out Utah State.
Yes, yes. Because Utah State was missing a couple of their better players.
Yeah, and we really won that game, obviously, on a last second shot.
Well, let's talk about that. Now that we're done with that, with the Gonzaga game, Craig Cusick is one of the most polarizing players on the team if you go to Cougar Board or read Twitter. A lot of people love him. He's a walk-on. He, you know, has given a lot to the program, and then he hits this game-winning shot on a week when, you know, he had bad news personally about his father. You know, it's a great story. A lot of people don't like Cusick. They think he represents, you know, here is some short white guy from Utah that's really not that fast, talented, or that good of a shooter. And quite frankly, I don't understand the Cusick hate. You know what I mean? Like, I know he's not a great player. I get that. You know, he probably knows he's not a great player. You know, but he hits 40% of his three-point shots. You know, he kind of does what, you know, if he was our eighth best player or ninth best player, I would say that's great. Unfortunately, he's probably more like our sixth or seventh, at least so far this season, which is probably not what you want.
Right.
So where do you stand on Cusick? How do you view the guy? I mean, I like him. I like walk-ons. I like that kind of stuff. So I think it's a little unfair that, you know, he gets slammed on Twitter sometimes because maybe our depth isn't as good as it should be. That, I mean, last time I checked, Cusick didn't determine our depth.
Well, I don't understand the hate on Cusick either. I do understand the love, though. I think there's a lot of BYU fans out there who reminisce about their glory days playing church basketball, and they see themselves in Cusick. They see this walk-on guy who people, you know, I don't know if I want to use the term scrappy, but that's an overused term anytime you talk about somebody who's a walk-on. He must be scrappy. But I think that's where the love comes from. The hate comes from the fact that you have all these people who think that he's great because he's a walk-on, he's doing all this stuff, but he's not one of the better players on the team. He doesn't do much. I mean, he was 1-for-7 that night against Utah State. Just happens to be that one won the game.
Yeah, he was not. That was not a good game for him until that moment. Which
that's right.
But frankly, you can kind of understand because of the personal situation. I can't imagine that wouldn't affect you.
Well, that and his walk-on.
He's not supposed to carry the team. That wasn't...
That's right. I mean, it's not like we're talking about Dennis Pitta here, right? So, I mean, but we've had some decent walk-ons in other sports. And if we thought about it, there's probably a handful in basketball, right? So, So I don't understand what the hate's all about. I think, you know, he's doing the best he can to try and contribute to the team. He came through in a big way at that particular moment and won that game for him. And so I don't think you can take that away from him. There's not really a lot to hate there. I guess that's merely my take on it. That's not very exciting, but that's how I feel.
No, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. So let's shift gears completely to the NFL draft. Right now, all the talk is about Ziggy Ansah. And I don't mean among BYU fans. I mean among draftniks and national columnists. I mean among everybody. I mean everybody's talking about Ziggy Ansah. Part of it's the story, right? Which we as BYU fans know very, very well. And by this point, probably any college football fan and pro football fan probably is aware of it. Did you know that he only started playing football in 2010?
Is that true?
He didn't know how to put on his shoulder pads.
Is that true?
And when asked to name an NFL team, he struggled to do so. But anyway, I love the fact that, you know, all that stuff. But it is a great story, so I understand why the press goes to it. But forget all that stuff for a second. There are people that believe he will be a top 10 pick. And not just, you know, BYU fans or some crazy. Like, people that do this scouting stuff for a living see him. And they see what, quite frankly, you and I have been talking about his NFL potential for a year. Maybe longer. Just that combination of speed and size is so rare that NFL teams, I thought coming into the season, he'd be like a second or third round pick at the high side. I never thought first round, though. So I'm not gonna claim that. So what are your thoughts?
The guy is just he's an athletic specimen. You know, it's not surprising, though, for a guy that, you know, would work so hard to be as part of the track team to do so well in the 40, really shouldn't be a shocker to anybody.
Not if they watched him.
Not if they watched him. And any BYU fan knows that the guy's just got freakish athleticism. He's got very good reach. So these are some of the things that get measured at the combine that won't necessarily come up in game film. You know, it's all these numbers that these guys like to crunch. So all of the stuff that the combine is designed to measure, he's got the pieces for it. And so for him to go in and do so well is surprising, but shouldn't be shocking. And on a certain level, I think a lot of BYU fans really should have seen it coming. Getting up in there into the top 10, though, that still, for me, is surprising. But I think it's a legitimate projection. It sounds to me like people have been very impressed with him and what he's able to do. You know, there's an article on the NFL, on NFL.com, where they interview him, and there's a video that was on the network, but you know, one of the comments that's down here is somebody says, oh, well, you know, this guy's a bust. He's just really athletic, but he doesn't know how to play football. I believe that some of the best people at coaching football work for teams in the NFL. If they can't take a guy with this kind of athletic ability and size and turn him into something productive as part of their squad, they probably need to go do something else.
Anybody who's making a comment like that about Ansah doesn't know what they're talking about. And I don't say that as a BYU fan. I say that as someone who got to watch him play and saw the improvements. When he played sparingly last season, or the season before, I guess you'd say, 2011, he was just a physical specimen, right? He just ran upfield, and they said, go hit the quarterback. And he was easy for a lineman to defend, because you basically just let him run and kind of push him and get him deep in the backfield. You couldn't do that last year. And people were double-teaming him and all this other stuff, scheming for him, and they lined him up everywhere, on the nose, on the end, as a linebacker. You know, he improved so much between 2011 and 2012 that for anyone to say, he's just a physical specimen, they obviously haven't watched any of his performances and don't know that he already did improve and took coaching and got better. So,
and,
like you
and
said,
I don't think he's peaked yet.
No, I don't think he's peaked.
Now, do I think he's going to go? Do I think he's going to be in the Pro Bowl next year? I'm not saying that.
No, but I do
believe he's absolutely capable of getting into an NFL system and contributing right away.
John, Pierre Paul, how do you say it? Is it John?
I've always just said John, but maybe I'm just being culturally
so. Anyway, he had an okay rookie season, but played mainly on third downs and passing downs. And then his second year had 16.5 sacks. And I'm not predicting 16.5 sacks in any season for Ziggy, because that's probably, I mean, that's high. That's a lot of sacks. But that being said, he's likely, wherever he goes, he's going to not play 80-90% of snaps, right? He's going to play 30%, maybe 40% of defensive snaps. And he's going to learn the game, and he's going to usually be in situations where they can tell him, go get the quarterback, you know? And, you know, I think sometimes people overrate having played since Pee Wee League, right? This isn't rocket science. Yes, having those instincts and having played, you know, Van Noy clearly has better instincts, quote-unquote, than Ansa because he's played the game for longer. But in the end, if you're going to play in the NFL, you don't get there because you played since Pee Wee. You get there because they're all physical freaks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody in the NFL is scrappy in the Rudy kind of way, right? They're all there because they're really good, and he is.
They were all the best players on every team they've ever played on. They were among the best players.
Yes, except, I mean, there's a couple exceptions. Welker, you know, wasn't highly recruited out of high school and stuff, but once he got his thing, he was pretty good at Texas Tech. You know what I mean? So I look around and I'm like, the coaches, whoever he gets, will be a big, you know, they will help him most likely become, I think, if not a Pro Bowl player, a very effective 10-year NFL player, I don't think is a ridiculous thing to say.
Well, and when you talk about a career that long in the NFL, the other thing that's working to his advantage is the fact that he hasn't been playing football his whole life. A guy his size who's been playing football since Pee Wee is going to have some nagging injuries, some past surgeries, and things that he's going to be carrying with him. You know, some of this athletic baggage that he'd be taking with him to the next level. And he's not carrying that stuff on the same level as other players at his position. And so I think that turns out to be an advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the other part is, as you look at, say, other defensive linemen or outside linebackers, depending on how you want to classify them, depending on your scheme, but, you know, pass rush specialists in the draft. The question is, there are certainly some that I think today are better than he is. You know, their technique and all that stuff. I think that's very, very safe to say. But is their upside as high as his? And that's what, as an NFL team, as you weigh if you're going to draft this kid or not, you say, well, yeah, maybe, you know, the guy from Florida State or Oregon will be safer, right? They'll come in and they can probably play more snaps in the 2013 season.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got Jean-Pierre Paul 2.0, then he's worth a top 10 pick, right? If you believe that's the case, which I don't know if any teams do. I mean, everybody's talking nice about him now, but you know, Schwartz of the Lions got to ask Jim Schwartz of the Lions, got to ask point blank, because, you know, he coached him at the Senior Bowl, if he was going to draft him or would they take him at, because they have, what, the fifth pick? And he, of course, just smiled and said, I'm not answering that question one way or the other, right? Why would you? You don't want to give anything away. But if he ends up going in the top 10, it's certainly not going to shock me or you or anybody that's following this draft.
But wouldn't it be great if he ended up somewhere like Detroit? Not that Detroit's a great team, but if you look at their defense and their defensive line, that, from a football standpoint, could be a really good environment for him. A great place to learn and develop as a player, and a place where he wouldn't be expected or needed to get in there and play 80-90% of the snaps.
Yeah, and you know, the Browns have been talked about at number 6 as a team that wants a defensive end. You know, so I think the Lions are possible and the Browns in the top 10. Once you get out of that, I don't know what the Cardinals are going to do. I don't know what the Bills are going to do. And the Jets are a mess. I really hope he doesn't end up with the Jets.
No, I wouldn't wish the Jets on anyone.
And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Patriots fan and I hate the Jets.
I wouldn't wish the Jets on a Ute.
Yeah, yeah. No, Alex Smith could get traded there. That'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be pretty awesome. But it's not just because of that. They're just – the whole organization is kind of a mess. So yeah. I'd rather him go to a more stable place where I think he'll get the coaching that he needs. But after that, there's a bunch of teams that could use him. But a lot of these teams have like eight needs. That's why they're at the front of the draft. They weren't very good last year. So it's hard to say which one they'll address first. And it really comes down to what do they think of those players. And does anybody have him as a top five, top ten pick on their board? You know, right now, Todd McShay's on ESPN has him going to New Orleans at 15. I think that would be awesome.
Oh, that'd be great.
I think they're a rebound type of team.
I'd become a New Orleans fan for
yeah.
that.
So, but anyway, I'd be happy. And if he went to Pittsburgh, it'd just be easy because there's, you know, we've already got the beard there.
So, the beard.
So that's enough about Ziggy. Let's stay on the draft for a second here, Matt, and talk briefly about Manti Te'o. So I don't think we need to recap the last few months of this young man's life. But let's just say it hasn't been the easiest. And whether you believe some of it was self-inflicted or not, whatever. In the end, what it comes down to is this guy was talked about as a top five pick. And due to some off-the-field weirdness, as well as running a very slow 40 time this week at the NFL Combine, right now, it's more looking like, I mean, there's people talking about him slipping out of the first round, you know, and he's going at like, in a lot of mock drafts, late teens and to the late 20s, which a couple months ago, he was consistently in the top 15. Inside linebackers typically aren't taken in the top five picks of the draft, right? But as I look at that and I see that, I'm like, you know, what, has he really fallen that far? I mean, I know he had a bad game against Alabama, but wasn't he really good the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's been almost eerie to watch this. You know, I think I've seen this movie before. At one point, he's the king of the world, and by the time the movie's over, he's clinging to a raft in the middle of the freezing ocean watching the ship sink. And that's really what this feels like. You know, his 40 time is really the thing out of the combine everybody's talking about, right?
But unfortunately, I mean, for him, who's the girl that's on the piece of wood that should save his life, she doesn't actually exist.
So there's room. Climb up on the raft,
climb up on the piece of wood, Manti.
But in all seriousness, the 40 time was slow. You know, this whole situation with him is just, it's a crazy story. But what it really comes down to is, when teams interview him, will they think that he's psychologically some type of liability? Is he going to end up in jail? And I don't see that. I don't see that being a problem. The other thing that a lot of the smart front offices in the NFL will do is they will rely on the game film. And they will go back. He's played a lot of football while he was in college. And he did have a very bad game against Alabama. He was completely neutralized. He was just shut out of the game. He was a complete non-factor. Outside of that, though, he's got some pretty good tape. And, you know, if they're looking at how somebody's going to fit into a scheme and they feel like he will fit and that he's not a huge liability, I don't think it's really going to be a huge problem for him. Now, do I think he's going in the top 5 or 10? No. But I think he'll get drafted in a decent situation. I don't think that he's scaring teams off. I think that, you know, teams go in and talk to him. You know, John Elway said, I just want to talk to him. I just want to sit him down. And I'm looking forward to getting to know him as a football player. So I think that's really what it comes down to for these teams. It's not like he's a criminal.
No, and that's the thing is that, you know, the to me, the 40 time is much more concerning if I was an NFL team thinking of drafting him than the fake girlfriend stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Okay. Something that's weird. We'll talk to him about it. But, you know, I wouldn't want to overplay that if I was looking at, you know. But is he fast enough to play in the middle of the field in whatever scheme I run as a coach, you know? That would be my question. And game film can answer some of that because they did play good competition and you can see him in pass coverage and some other things and in the open field. He looked terrible against Alabama. There's no doubt about that.
They had all this time to scheme for him, and they put together.
I mean,
and they put together a blocking scheme that really shut him down.
Yeah.
I think he was also, he was pretty well distracted at that point.
Well, we didn't know that at the time, but it turned out that he was very distracted.
He was a confused, confused man at that point in time. You know, no matter what happened, I mean, he was distracted, and he had a bad game.
Yeah, he had a bad game, but
at a bad time.
That doesn't throw out, like you said. There's a lot of film on this guy, and shouldn't throw that out just because of one bad game or some strange off the field stuff. So you know, there's the draft. We'll have more on this as it gets closer to the draft. We'll talk more. There's no doubt of that. So, Matt, let's switch to the offensive coaching staff. This is kind of old news, so we won't spend a lot of time on it, but we haven't talked about it since Robert and I kind of put his team together and put the last couple pieces in. The last two pieces were Jason Beck, not to be confused with the quarterback he used to back up, John Beck.
So we're talking about Ja Beck, not Joe Beck.
That's right. That's right. And he was, you know, played at BYU for several years, did not play a lot. Maybe kind of similar to Lark this year. He did get kind of a cool game senior year during an injury to play and did well. And, you know, played for a couple years at BYU. And, you know, I think that was Utah State in 2006 that he got to play against. So anyway, he comes, not a huge surprise. I think people had been talking about him. Whether he's a good coach or not, I have no idea. He's got a pretty good resume so far. And teams, the quarterbacks and the offenses have done well where he's been. He was at Simon Fraser, which I'd never even heard of. But, you know, but I trust that they got the guy they wanted. Not Ty Detmer, by the way. His name is not Ty Detmer.
Well, interesting thing here is I believe that we're looking at a guy in Jason Beck who played for both 2J and an I.
Yes.
And I think that clearly plays into his selection. He's a known commodity.
He's a known commodity, absolutely.
They know who he is, and they know what that working relationship is going to feel like.
Yes. The other guy that came in about that same time is Guy Holliday. Never before had I heard of this guy. You know, he's
neither had a lot of BYU fans.
No, and he's got a lot of experience. He's been around the college football world, both in and out of the FBS. You know, he's coached at Mississippi State, Cornell, UTEP. You know, and we've got a tweet bag question from Elder Mars on Twitter asking us about who might be the recruiting coordinator. He was a recruiting coordinator at UTEP. I don't think they've said who the recruiting coordinator is going to be. I think he's a possibility. I think Atuaya might be a possibility as a recruiting coordinator, though that's maybe not in his first year as a college coach. Maybe that's not realistic, but I don't know who the recruiting coordinator is going to be, but Holliday has that experience, at least for the last couple of seasons at UTEP. And the question had been, would they bring in a non-BYU, non-LDS guy? And they did. You know, because I think people were all this, like, freaked out, oh my gosh, they're not going to have a non-LDS guy, and who are the players going to talk to, and the ones that aren't LDS and stuff. And I think that type of criticism is, quite frankly, a little weird before the staff has been finished. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're going after the straw man. Well, what if they don't? Well, just wait. You know, and if they don't, then criticize or object or you know, whatever. So anyway, any thoughts on the coaching staff that he's put together before we move on?
A couple things I am excited about. I am excited about Holliday. If you have the opportunity, I recommend people get on. I think you can find most of these videos on YouTube. But if you get on YouTube, you can find footage of him conducting drills and practices and interviews at UTEP from last summer. And the stuff is interesting to watch. And his approach, the way he thinks about it, it reminded me of the things that Anai was saying in his press conference on signing day. And so I see from a philosophy standpoint why this is a good fit. I also feel like recruiting is going to land in the lap of Holiday and Atuwaiye. And I don't know how they're going to work this out, but I think the two of them are going to be running the show there. Atuwaiye has spent a lot of time working with student athletes as far as keeping them comfortable in the college environment and all, and taking care of all of those types of things. And Holiday knows how to recruit and has recruited in Texas. And there's a lot of good football players coming out of Texas. So I think both of them are really good ads. It's a lot of fun. Overall, I like the fact that almost everybody here on the offensive side of the ball played at BYU on teams that we all like to talk about.
Yes, and yes, that's true.
So they I think they get it. And they've all kind of been around each other a little bit at different times. And I think that chemistry is going to be important. So I think as far as ability to recruit a variety of players in a variety of places and ability to understand what BYU needs to do to be successful the way they have been in the past, I think this is a pretty good situation from a coaching standpoint. So really what's left to see is, can they get it done?
Yeah. You know, will the things that Anai said about being faster and hitting harder and having an offense that keeps defense is on the, you know, on their heels, will that come to fruition or not? You know?
Yeah, like an offensive line culture and no time for a huddle. I mean, these are all great things to talk about. You know, but can they do it? I think they've got the right pieces on the staff.
Yeah, I think so. I am.
So
I feel good.
I'm optimistic.
Yeah. Before we get to the tweet bag, one more topic. Ryan Teeples, who's also known as the Utah sports guy, right? On Twitter, isn't that his handle?
I believe that.
Sorry, Ryan, if I'm butchering your Twitter handle. Anyway,
he's not really sorry, Ryan. He's not really sorry.
I'm a little sorry.
That sounds to me like you're feigning sorrow.
It's possible I'm feigning sorrow. I do that quite a bit.
Sorrow really the big word.
Yeah, you did say that. Usually I'm supposed to use big words in quite not exactly the right way.
Yeah, I do that everywhere else. I might as well start doing it on the podcast.
I like that. So he wrote a piece or a series of pieces, four articles for the Deseret News, talking about the Big 12 and BYU. And he started with a piece, Matt, that I laughed when I read it out loud because I missed the Twitter exchange. I wasn't on Twitter much the day this happened. But a person on Twitter tweets Tom Homo, which I don't know why people tweet the AD and coaches and stuff. I don't. But good
on Tom Homo. I mean, he really interacts.
He does.
With fans on Twitter.
He does. And he interacted on this one. So the tweet was from Rich Nielsen at Rise and Shout, not to be confused with us at BYU _ Rise Shout. What's that?
He's at Rise and Shout Out.
Shout Out, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not here to up his listeners. I mean his followers. I'm confused about BYU's direction. Does BYU prefer independence over Big 12 membership? Fans don't know BYU's ultimate goal. I'm not trying to be too critical of this tweet, but I'm going to anyway. What are they talking about? Why do people always say this? We don't know what the ultimate goal is. They've said what the ultimate goal is. Repeatedly, they've said what the ultimate goal is. Mendenhall's ultimate goal is to win a national championship. That's his ultimate goal. Homo's and the administration's is about exposure for the church. That's what they've said. It's really clear. I don't understand why people don't get what the ultimate goal is. The ultimate goal for the coach and the team is to win as many football games as they can. And for Homo and the rest, it's more about, you know, that exposure for the church that's positive. And I don't think that anybody who's in control of BYU as an institution is really that worried about whether we're independent or Big 12, only as it relates to getting some exposure. And quite frankly, we're getting a lot of exposures in independent. So Homo responded kind of like I responded, actually. Listen carefully, he says. There has been no offer. Thus, we strive for great success as independent in football.
See, I think that right there is the essence of where the confusion among fans exists, is that fans want BYU to just walk in. Like, why would the Big 12 or the Pac 12 or any of these conferences not have made an offer? We're BYU. Like, why are we not in one of these conferences? And maybe they just have, like Homo's saying, like, there's not been an offer. It's not like BYU is snubbing this stuff. There's been all this rumor and innuendo about, you know, all these things that BYU has asked for, but that's just not the way this is actually playing out in real life.
Well, it takes on a life of its own on Twitter and Cougar Board, where people just make these crazy assumptions and then just assume that they're fact. Well, we did get an offer from the Big 12. I have yet to see anything credible that says that. Homo says no, I believe him. But most of the writers that cover the Big 12 have said no, BYU has never been given an offer. So I don't.
And I've not seen any signs from the administration saying that they're anti-joining the Big 12 or another big conference.
I don't think so either. He then responds to that effect. Another tweet asked, and I liked this question, didn't mean any disrespect, says at Tay Joyce 8. Just feel the fans want Big 12 and don't feel the school wants Big 12. By the way, that's a little of an assumption. I don't think all fans want Big 12, by the way. He then says, don't feel the school wants Big 12 without demanding the farm. Homo's response, very telling. School not demanding anything other than the obvious Sunday play. I fully understand fans' preference for BCS. Wow.
What's interesting there is he makes no mention of TV rights.
No, he does not mention in any of the tweets subsequently did he mention TV rights. I don't think TV rights is the deal, quite frankly.
No,
I think it's
access and exposure. It's access in terms – and fans, though, when they hear the administration say access and exposure, they hear access and they stop listening because they think it's access to the BCS, and it's not.
Right.
It's access for BYU alumni and fans to BYU football games, which means we can schedule games anywhere in the country, any time of year. That's what that access is.
And see them.
And putting them on TV
everyone can see them
Saturday. That's what they mean by access. And exposure is, as you said before, exposure for the church. Joining the Big 12 could grant them both of those things without a TV deal with ESPN. Because, you know, it's not like you're dealing with the Mountain West Conference at that point. You're dealing with a big-time conference that's going to put you on TV.
So they have signed their TV deal, right? The Big 12 has.
Yeah.
So here's the other part, and Ryan Teeples spells this out very well. Because they don't have their own channel, like the Big Ten, expands and people go, that's crazy, Rutgers and whatever else. But they believe they'll get the Big Ten network on different cable companies, and that's pure revenue. They get paid by the cable companies to have the station on their cable, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to be as successful as they think, but that's the plan. Big 12 doesn't have that. So unless they go back and renegotiate their new TV deal, when they add a new team, it's just splitting the money up one more way. Unless they go back and renegotiate. Is BYU enough of a value where they could go back and renegotiate? Maybe. You know, obviously BYU on the free market has done pretty well for itself with the deal with ESPN. But the point is, when everyone says, well, why wouldn't the Big 12 want to go to 12 teams? That's one of the reasons. Unless they add a team like a Florida State or something where they feel like they can basically go and demand a renegotiation of their contract, why would, if I'm Baylor, why do I vote for that? Why do I vote for BYU to come in? I don't. I vote against it. I would totally vote against it.
It does nothing for you.
It does nothing for you. All it does is add another, in Baylor's case, probably a better football program. And on top of that, you're just splitting up the pie one more way. Great. I don't care. You know. And so unless a conference championship game or something else is going to just grow that pie that much more, so that you're not actually losing money, that it's a gain, then why do they care? And I think that's what people don't understand, that the Sunday play, though that may be a massive issue, I don't know if that's really the issue that's keeping BYU, the Big 12, from reaching out to BYU and making that offer that apparently has never been made.
Right.
So, well, let's dip into the tweet bag here, Matt. I asked for some last-minute tweet bag questions. Let's take one we are absolutely unqualified to answer.
Sweet. We're best at that.
Yes, we're really good.
That is when we are at our best.
Yes, absolutely. At Sean Howard 1985 asks, what are the chances BYU's rugby team repeats as national champion? Rugby game this Saturday, available online, free streaming. I'm going to set it at 100%.
Yes, me too.
100%! Go rugby!
We're good at rugby.
We are very good at rugby. As I've mentioned before, I covered that for the Daily Universe back in the day, and they actually had me suit up one time for practice. Luckily,
that must have been a terrible idea. I'm surprised to hear you're still alive.
Well, luckily there weren't smartphones back then to record the video of it, or I'm sure it would be on YouTube. Hilarity ensued.
Oh, that would be awesome. You were not a large man.
I'm still not a large man, but I was even much smaller then. I was probably 120 pounds at the time. Maybe 125. So, and like the small guys were just towering over me. And there were a lot of big dudes on that team that year. So he has another question for us that I thought was good. How old is Matthew Dellavedova's mouthpiece?
Ooh. How long has Dellavedova been playing basketball?
I don't know.
That's the answer to your question. That thing is probably, it needs to be studied.
Yes. I think it should be studied.
I'm going to guess it is 12 and a half years old. That's what I'm going to say.
No, that works. Sure. Why not? Both times we've lost to them this year, man, there are a lot of BYU fans on Twitter who hate Matthew Dellavedova.
Oh, the hatred is strong.
Like, I don't hate him. I mean, you know, I mock him a little bit. The mouthpiece is funny, you know, and whatever else. But, I mean, he's not even the fifth ugliest guy on that team. When people call him ugly, I'm like, I don't really think he's ugly. I mean,
but listen, look at the squad. I mean, the bar is pretty low.
That's true. Olenek, I mean, he's kind of freaky looking.
Don't even get me started. When my 8-year-old son saw highlights of Olenek, there was all sorts of confusion.
Yes, I have no doubt of that. I have no doubt of that.
And he's a pretty smart kid.
Yeah. So, well, that's all we got this week. We apologize for the 1-week hiatus. As you can still tell, I'm not 100% voice, but I will be next week. Oh, you better believe it. You can tweet at us, as always, at BYU_RiseShout. You can email me, adam@loyalcougars.com. You can email Matt@loyalcougars.com if you have something to say about the show or have a question you'd like us to tackle that's maybe a little longer form than 140 characters. Of course, we encourage you to go out and get your BYU coverage, well, maybe not all through VanquishTheFoe.com, but a lot through VanquishTheFoe.
That's where I would start.
That's where I would start. And stop. And end. But just kidding. But anyway, we will be back again next week to talk about the Gonzaga game, to talk about what's going on with the West Coast Conference Tournament and what we think BYU's chances are, all that kind of fun stuff. Next week, and probably a few minutes of boring you with baseball talk as well.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Matt, anything else before we sign off?
No, really just more baseball talk, but I'll save it for next week and a series of tweets to Zach Bloxham.
Yes, I endorse both of those courses of action. So thanks everybody again for listening. Thank you so much for downloading. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell everybody that you listen to this podcast and how awesome it is. And we will, of course, catch you next time.
Go Cougars.